Oh, hello. Thank you so much for stopping by. This is Grandma Jane, and I'm so happy to welcome you to my story room. I've got a story to share with you today that's written by a friend of mine, and that piano music you hear in the background is played by another friend. The writer of the story is Lori, and he used to live in Klatskanai, Oregon, and went to Linfield College and then finished his education in Ireland. And Jennifer has traveled to Ireland. Jennifer Goodenberger's beautiful music in the background as we hear the story from the heart. There was once a young man who was born sometime near the end of the last century to a good family rumored to be of royal blood. The young man grew to be extraordinarily handsome, and he was raised in luxury and educated at the most noted schools. Despite these apparent hardships, the young man turned out to be decent, successful, and prosperous in his own right. He bought and sold property, started businesses, built factories, and collected a good many pieces of beautiful art. One day, as the young man was visiting an antique store that he happened to own, he noticed a full-length mirror sitting in the back storeroom. He was so taken with its elegant appearance that he ordered it to be shipped to his house and placed in his bedroom. That night, as the young man was about to retire, he happened to glance into the mirror. Instead of seeing his own rather handsome reflection, he was quite surprised to see the image of an old, old person dressed in abundant gauze. "Hello," said the image. "Well, hello," replied the startled young man. "May I come out? Please be my guest." A gust of wind blew from the mirror, causing the young man to close his eyes. And when he opened them, there in front of him was the ancient person, and the room smelled of exotic scents. "Thank you," said the ancient. "I was trapped inside that mirror for over a week, and I was beginning to fear that I might be in there forever until you rescued me." "Oh, you are too kind," said the young man. "I merely invited you to step out." "Well, that was enough to save me. My escape depended on an invitation from a person with an open mind and a true heart. Before you came along, I was forced to look on the most rude and thoughtless people." "Oh, those were just customers," said the young man. "They're like that when they shop." "Well, I've forgotten them already," said the ancient, "but I must tell you that I am a genie, and I'm obliged to grant you any wish you care to make." "Well, it's really nice of you to offer," responded the young man, "but I really couldn't accept anything for such a small kindness." "See here," said the genie, "there's no such thing as a small kindness. There is such a thing as taking politeness too far. You must allow me to grant you the wish, or I may have to return to the mirror and face your customers." The young man recognized the horror of the genie's plight and set about at once to the task of selecting a wish for the genie to grant. This proved to be no small undertaking, for the young man had everything he wanted in the way of money, wealth, and power. He thought, and he thought. After nearly 22 minutes of deliberation, the young man slapped his thigh and laughed merrily. "Well, let's hear it," said the genie. I wish for happiness for all the people I love." "Done," said the genie, and immediately it disappeared. The young man shook his head and wondered if he hadn't dreamed everything that he'd just witnessed. "Perhaps I'm asleep," he thought. But when he looked into the mirror, he saw a gray mist that was clearing slowly. "Happiness for all who I love," whispered his reflection, and the young man thought he heard a soft sigh. The next morning, the young man decided he would travel to Paris to visit his family. As he rode off in his coach, going across his vast estate, the young man noticed that many of the servants and workers stopped to wave and bid him safe passage across the channel. They seem rather cheerful, he thought to himself. The young man had known his servants and their family since he was but a lad, and he loved them. It made him quite happy to see his loyal employees in such fine spirits. But as the coach made its way to London, the young man noticed many impoverished people traveling in misery along the road. And as he entered the city to catch the train to the coast, he noticed even more anguish amongst the homeless families and street urchins who lived on the curbs of the cobblestone streets. The young man had often seen the ravages of poverty, but on this day, the sights were particularly grim. On one of the crowded streets, the young man happened to see two of his dearest friends from college. He was an Oxonian, stepping through the crowds of poor and laughing merrily. The young man hid in his coach and watched his beloved friends. They stopped at a small shop and ate rich pastries in front of the starving children, chuckling happily all the while. The young man ordered his driver to take him away when it looked as if his friends might recognize his coach. The young man continued his journey in gloom, for the misery he had seen haunted him, as did the happiness of his friends and servants. Luckily, when he embarked on the boat that crossed the channel to France, he discovered that the captain was an old, much-adored friend of the family. The good captain was in a jolly mood and regaled the young man with outrageous tales of sea travel and body jokes. The young man's landing in France was uneventful, and so was the rest of his journey, except that he saw more unfortunates, and his grim mood returned. The first sight of Paris took the young man's mind from his melancholy thoughts and feelings, for he loved this great and beautiful city with its fabulous buildings and streets, and its gifted artists from all over the world, and its unsurpassed restaurants and open-air markets where picky Parisians argued with vendors over the qualities of their wares and food. A gorgeous spring day heralded the young man's entrance into the city. The horses drawing his coach high-stepped with a wonderful swagger as they slowed and then stopped in front of the house owned by the young man's family. Several windows on the house had been flung open, and the joyous sound of laughter echoed up and down the street. "Hello, dear brother," called one of the young man's many sisters. "Oh, jolly good, Jack has come to visit at long last." The young man recognized the last strong and cheery voice to be his father's. More windows were flung open, and the entire family showered the young man with kind words and greetings, for he was somewhat of a hero to them. Jack, as the young man was called, came from a very old and wealthy family, which meant that nothing much was expected of him by anyone. Thus, it was quite a surprise to everyone when he managed to treble the family fortune. In some circles, such success would have been regarded as impertinent and in poor taste. But Jack's dear family generously forgave him his excesses and welcomed him home with open arms. On this particular day, Jack's family was particularly happy, for as you may have already guessed, the wish he had asked of the genie had come to pass. Everyone Jack loved was happy, even his great Aunt Matilda, who had scarcely smiled or laughed in over 30 long years. At first, Jack was pleased to stay with his family in the great gorgeous city of Paris and to share their happy life. It was a relief to sit at the supper table and listen to cheerful stories and warm laughter. In the past, his family had been prone to petty and incessant bickering. Now they scarcely argued at all, and when they did, it was in graceful, humorous language. But after several weeks, Jack began to wonder if there wasn't such a thing as too much happiness. Every word he said, every thought he expressed, was greeted with the same cheerful acceptance. When he spoke of the poverty he had witnessed, no one in his family could muster so much as a second of sadness for the unhappy people in their lives. Now, Jack's family were truly decent people, despite the fact that they were born rich. They began to notice that their favorite son was growing somber and pale, and that he was beginning to lock himself in his room for days at a time. They did not know that he was finding their happiness unbearable, but they were wise enough and caring enough to want to do something to cheer Jack up, which he badly needed. Jack's eldest sister came upon the idea of taking him to the ballet, which in those days was a grand, overwhelming spectacle attended by the most accomplished people of Europe, and of course, the most beautiful people. It was decided that Jack would attend the ballet with a young married couple who had been dear friends of his since childhood. The day of the ballet arrived, and Jack's family dressed him for the occasion with much fuss and ado. As we know, ballets always seem to stir up quite a bit of fuss and ado. And then the evening came, and the coach arrived to take Jack and his friends to the ballet. Jack's family sent him off with happy wishes and loving hopes. But even the most joyful among them couldn't help but notice how melancholy he appeared. The young married couple was alive, lively, and young, and of course Jack loved them dearly, so they were quite happy to boot. They carried on a brisk, engaging conversation as the coach traveled to the great opera house where the ballet was to be performed. Jack was quiet and grim. He stared out the curtain window of the coach at the nameless people who huddled in misery along the streets. He knew that many of them were murderers and thieves and drunken care-nots, but that many more were simply unfortunate and were no more or less deserving of happiness than the joyful young couple sitting next to him. By and by, Jack saw no more misery, for the coach turned onto one of the great streets of Paris, which was lined with magnificent buildings. The people on these streets were plump and well-dressed in gorgeous clothes of satin and silk. Jack sighed and promised himself that he would make an effort to be more cheerful for the sake of his friends and family. The audience of the ballet was spectacular, and the dancers weren't bad either. In those days, people often went to the ballet just to look at each other. Jack did not bother to watch the many royal celebrities and other famous people. He spent most of his time watching the dance. But during a quiet moment, he happened to look over at the balcony on the other side of the hall, and there he saw a beautiful young woman with long dark hair and large dark eyes that were sad. "Who is that?" he said. "She's the favorite niece of a Russian princess," whispered his friend's wife. "Oh," said Jack. But the young couple, his dear friends, looked at each other knowingly, and they noticed that Jack did not watch much more of the ballet for the rest of the evening. Jack was captivated by the vision of the sad young woman dressed in white. There was something about her that made his heart ache with bittersweet pain. When the ballet ended, Jack fairly ran from his balcony seat in an effort to meet the young woman before she left. Poor Jack. His way was blocked by the throngs of ballet-goers admiring themselves, and he arrived at the entrance to the great hall only in time to see the haunting young woman leave in a coach. "I must know where she lives," he cried to his friends. "Oh, dear Jack, you only have to ask. She lives near us in a fine house with her aunt and uncle." The next day, Jack sent the young woman a lavish bouquet of roses and a note explaining that he had seen her at the ballet and admired her. The delivery boy came back and said that she had accepted the flowers, but had offered no reply except a sad thank you to the delivery boy himself. "I must see her," thought Jack. So he disguised himself in a dark cloak and traveled to the street she lived on. After he arrived, he felt very much like a fool, for he didn't know what to do. He was about to leave when he saw her front door open and she appeared, dressed in dark clothes and carrying the roses he had sent her. As she walked away, Jack followed her. She went to a poor section of town where the streets were narrow and the houses were old and decrepit. Soon Jack heard children calling. "Katrina! Katrina!" they shouted. She smiled for the first time, and Jack was sure the sight would break his heart, for her smile was full of pain and despair, as hopeless as the ragged, coughing children who surrounded her and accepted her caresses. "What have you brought us, Karina?" "Roses, my dear children. I have brought you roses." "And what are we to do with these roses, Katrina?" they asked. "You must take them downtown and sell them, and with the money buy yourselves food to eat." Several of the children began to cry. "The roses are so beautiful," they said. "They remind us of you, and we don't want to sell them." Katrina looked sadly at her young friends. "You must sell the roses, children, for soon they'll fade and die and lose their value, and you will still be hungry." She gave each of the children a kiss on the forehead and handed each a rose, which she also kissed. And when she finished, Katrina began to weep. "I must leave you now," she told the children, "but you must all promise me that you will sell the roses and buy yourself food." They said, "We will, Katrina." She fled then, for she could no longer bear the sight of the children and their hunger. And when she was out of sight, Jack stepped forward. "Gold coins for the roses," he called. The children flocked to him and brought their roses, and he gave them the gold. "To the market now, with all of you," he said, after he received the last flower. "You must do what you promised, Katrina, you would do." And away the children ran, laughing merrily, and for the first time in many months, Jack felt himself to be happy. Gathering the roses into a bouquet again, Jack set out at once to return them to Katrina. At the door to her house, he was greeted by a rather aloof old butler who told Jack that Mademoiselle was not in the habit of seeing strange young men whom she had never formerly met. "Tell her," said Jack, "that the roses have returned." The butler went off grumbling, and soon Katrina appeared. Jack stood transfixed, for Katrina was more beautiful and sad than he had ever imagined anyone to be. He also saw that Katrina mistook him for a delivery boy because he was still dressed in the old cloak. "Mademoiselle," he said with a bow, "your roses have returned." "Where did they come from?" she said, taking the bouquet. "From the hands of the children you so dearly love, and from the heart of one who admires you." Katrina smiled briefly, and Jack thought he would jump for joy, but she soon lapsed into her previous sadness. Jack found himself longing to make her happy, and then he was struck with an idea. He quickly left without giving away his accidental disguise as a delivery boy. And the next day, Jack was up early. He went to the poor section of town and called for the children to come out. The children recognized him as the man who had given them gold, and they came running. "Oh, monsieur," they cried, "we have no roses to sell today." Of course, this did not matter to Jack. He gathered the children about him and told them of his desire to feed and clothe them and to see to it that they went to school. The children were very happy to hear about the food and clothing, but they raised a horrified cry at the thought of having to attend school. "But children, you must go to school," exclaimed Jack. "Why?" "Because your doing so will make Katrina happy." The children wanted to see Katrina happy, so they consented to go to school. When Katrina came to visit that day, she found them all dressed in clean clothes and sturdy shoes. "Children," she asked, "where did you get all this?" "The Rose Man, Katrina," is all they would say, and they also told her about going to school. "Are you happy, Katrina?" they asked. "Oh, yes, my children," she answered, but her smile was still sad. And she soon bade them goodbye and hurried off. When she arrived home, she found Jack waiting for her. "Are you the Rose Man?" she asked. Jack answered that he was. And he confessed that he was in love with her. Katrina looked upon him with the same sorrowful smile she had given the children and thanked him for his kindness. "But," she said, "you must not love me, for there are so many more important concerns in the world than I." Jack was crestfallen, for he had wanted to see Katrina happy, and he had also hoped that she might love him. When he saw that neither of his desires were coming to pass, he did what most young men do when they're rejected in love. He bid Katrina a hurried farewell and ran away as fast as his legs would take him. For many hours thereafter, Jack walked alone around Paris. He looked at the splendid buildings and cheery shopkeepers with a despondent gaze. He ignored the flower-laden parks where famous painters were busily creating masterpieces. He even ignored the unfortunate poor as they suffered through yet another day. The unhappiness that had captured Katrina had captured him too. And then, "Wait a second," he shouted. "What about the wish granted me by the genie, happiness for all I love?" The genie had not been truthful, for Jack was sure he loved Katrina, and she was still unhappy. As he thought about it, he became somewhat angry, for he believed that wishes were serious business, and this wish in particular had cost him quite a bit of personal pain, and now, just when it might please him and the person he believed he loved, it was not coming true. "Where is that genie?" he wondered. "I'd like to tell it a thing or two." And Jack smelled exotic scents, and there was a brief flash of light. "At your service," said the genie. "See here," said Jack with his stormy frown. "I believe there's a problem with the wish you granted me." "And what might that be?" answered the genie. "The wish you granted me specifically mentioned happiness for all the people I love."
"That is quite right."
"Well," said Jack, "there's a young woman whom I love, and she is not happy."
"Young man," said the genie, "not once in the last 1,000 years has there been the slightest problem with any of the wishes I have granted, and I can assure you that your wish is still true."
But then why is Katrina still unhappy?"
The genie rolled its eyes and looked sternly at Jack. "Your problem is quite common to you young people, and your love wishes," lectured the wise genie.
"What is that?"
"You don't really love Katrina. You only think you do."
And the genie disappeared in an indignant cloud of somewhat smelly smoke. And poor Jack was thunderstruck. He was positive that he loved Katrina. He had, after all the classic symptoms of love, weak knees, pale face, erratic behavior, an uneasy stomach, and most telling of all, sudden mood swings, both happy and sad. As he stood pondering the genie's last words, he heard a voice so faint, he mistook it as his own thought. "You must give Katrina something of your true self before you can truly love her," said the voice.
"My true self? What is that?"
Jack could not think of an answer, for he was a good many things, including rich, handsome, successful, somewhat vain, and a very good polo player. Somehow, though, he knew that none of these things could be given away as himself. He began to trudge home, his mind occupied with thoughts of true self and love. "Hello, dear Jack," called two voices in unison. Jack looked up and saw his friends, the young married couple sitting on a blanket in the park, enjoying the fine spring weather and a wonderful picnic. They were just the people he'd like to see and ask several important questions. "Hello," Jack called, and then he blurted out the question that was uppermost in his mind. "What is love?" The young couple looked with a long look at Jack and burst into merry laughter. "Oh, poor darling Jack," they said. "Love is the most horrible thing to describe and the most wonderful feeling to have. It's impossible to avoid and even more impossible to find, especially when you're trying to do either. It makes you both happy and sad, and you never know when you truly have it. But you might find out by..."
"By what? Tell me," said Jack.
"By asking a genie."
"Oh, no," moaned Jack.
"And the only way to get love," they continued. Jack finished, "is to give something of your true self." And for the second time that day, he took off running and didn't stop till he was home and safely locked inside his bedroom. The young married couple forgave him his rudeness, for he was truly a good friend. Jack spent a long, sleepless night before he decided what he must do. In the morning, he took a bath and dressed himself in his old dark cloak, even though the spring weather was warm and bright. As he walked to Katrina's, he heard the bells of the Cathedral of Notre Dame ringing in the distance, and the birds sang from the trees in the park. The solemn butler greeted Jack as grouchily as before, but this time he led Jack to the garden behind the house, where Katrina was seated in the shade of the weeping willow. Just like before, her beauty took Jack's breath away,
And just like before, he saw that she was filled with sorrow, and he longed for her to be happy. The words, "Give something truly of yourself," came to Jack's mind, and he understood that the little voice had not been his thoughts, but had been the genie telling him what he must do to fall in love. Jack sat down in the pleasant shade of the weeping willow in the beautiful garden and spoke to Katrina. He told her how much she shared his sorrow and how he looked upon the unfortunate people, the unfortunate children. And he told her how he had watched her give away the roses he sent her and how he had brought them back with gold so that she might be happy. And then Jack told her the truth closest to his heart and soul. He told her how he had come to Paris to visit his family and how their happiness made him feel alone because they were unable to acknowledge the grief that he felt when he saw the growing numbers of poor and unfortunate people. "When I saw you at the ballet, Katrina, I was sure that in some way you would understand what I was feeling." As Jack told these things to Katrina, he was blushing a color as deep as the most famous red wine in all of France, for he was not at all used to this idea of giving something of his own true self. Katrina looked at him solemnly for many seconds, and Jack found it difficult to meet her eyes. Suddenly, Katrina burst out laughing and gave poor, startled Jack a resounding kiss. Then she leapt up and danced joyfully around the garden, much to Jack's amazement and delight. "Of course I love you," she said. "How could I not help loving such a silly, serious person?" Jack was so elated he thought he might fly about the skies with all the birds of spring. Katrina was happy at long last. For hours he basked in her carefree laughter and sunny smiles, until finally the dour butler came and informed Jack that it was time for Mademoiselle's tea. "Oh, Jack," she exclaimed, "let's go to the ballet again. Let's go tonight." Of course, Jack readily agreed that this was a grand idea, and he arranged to pick her up in his coach. And then Jack went off to tell his family and friends that he had fallen in love. He also thought it would be best to wear something to the ballet that was a bit more elegant than his old dark cloak. Evening came to Paris with yellow skies and the last twitters of the birds as they settled into the trees in the parks. At Jack's house there was much fuss and ado, for there was another ballet in the offing, and Jack's family fairly sang with joy when they learned that their favorite son was happy and in love. Jack wore his finest clothes and took his fine coach to Katrina's house, where she was waiting with a beaming smile. Even her mean old butler had something of a smirk on his face. When they arrived at the ballet, all eyes were upon them, for they were a splendid-looking young couple, glowing with happiness. The ballet was a huge success, for all the dancers were inspired by the radiant young couple and gave the performance of their careers. The evening ended with thunderous applause as the prima ballerina herself curtsied to Katrina and Jack. The two of them left the great hall amid a shower of pleasantries, as nearly everyone had some kind word for them. "What a perfectly wonderful evening," said Jack as the coach took them away. "Yes, wasn't it?" The coach rolled slowly down the magnificent tree-lined avenues, and Jack was sure their happiness was complete until he mentioned having the driver take them to the old neighborhood where the poor children lived. Katrina frowned and said, "Dear sweet Jack, always bothering your head with such silly seriousness. Let the children alone. I'm sure everything will be all right." "But Katrina," Jack protested, She laughed again and told him not to be silly, not to spoil a perfectly wonderful night by being grim and occupied with things that were not his responsibility. She then smiled happily and looked out the coach window at the clear night sky. Jack looked at Katrina in amazement, but then he realized the horrible truth. He truly loved her, so she was happy and could have no other feelings. The wish she had been granted by the genie was in truth a curse. Katrina hummed happily all the way to her house and kissed Jack as he helped her from the coach. "Let's be happy always," she said. "All that concern and worry is such a bother." Jack shuddered and bade her good night. "Oh, why did I make such a stupid wish?" he thought. "I wish I could take it back." And suddenly the coach was filled with rare perfume. There was a gust of wind, and Jack was sitting face to face with the genie. "I knew this was going to happen," said the genie. "Few, if any, of these happiness wishes turn out the way they're supposed to. Happiness without sorrow is the worst form of cruelty." "May I take the wish back?" asked Jack. "Of course you may," answered the genie. "But," said Jack, hesitating, "will Katrina ever be happy if I do?" "Jack," smiled the genie, "all people have it within themselves to bring some happiness to the people they love, and I give you my word as a genie that you now truly love Katrina. And what is more, she truly loves you." A feeling of immense relief came over Jack as the wish was undone. A minor quarrel soon broke out within Jack's family, and his young couple friends had their first spat in over a month. They were soon making up, though. And on the other side of Paris, Katrina lost her dreamy smile as the well-being of the street children once again entered her mind. But then she remembered Jack, and part of her happiness returned, especially when she thought of him giving gold for the children's roses. She fell asleep with these fond visions in her mind and a faint smile on her lips. "There's just one more thing," the genie said to Jack. "What's that?" "I still have to grant you a wish, or it's back to the mirror for me." "Right," said Jack. "I know. I wish for a rose garden in Paris. A rose garden that may be visited by everyone, rich and poor, happy and sad." "Done," said the genie. And the very next day, a very beautiful spring Paris day, the whole town was amazed because they found a splendid garden filled with blooming roses of all colors. And in the beautiful garden walked a special young couple, glowing with love and yet still a little sad for all the misery and unhappiness in the world. Around the young couple, many children danced happily, and they took flowers to the beautiful young woman because the flowers seemed to bring her joy. And my friends, you've brought me joy by listening to my story this afternoon. Lori Ryerson, who wrote it, Jennifer Goodenberger, who played piano for you, and Grandma Jane, who just wanted to read it. Thank you. Come back again. Bye-bye.